from the campus of Gonzaga University in Spokane, Washington. You're listening to the G Suite Podcast, where we discuss all things Zag business.
Dr. Gaina Hoja is the Chief of Staff at the Spokane tech startup Ignitium. She is a quadruple Zag, having graduated from Gonzaga Prep and earning 3 degrees from GU. She talks about immigrating to the U.S. at age 15 and fulfilling her goals through hard work, perseverance, a belief in herself, and leveraging friends, family, and community.
Why, hello!
Hi there!
How are you?
I'm doing great. I have big hair on, big shoulders on. We're doing an 80s roller skating team building event today with the company. So I'm a little 80s inspired here.
You had me at 80s, best decade ever. Of course, I grew up in the 80s, so it's like my yeah. Fond memories of childhood, I suppose. So
I tried to go with 80s business Barbie kind of.
I love it. Well, Gaina, I have to tell you that every time I see you, and sometimes it's briefly and we walk by each other, I always have fond memories because you were in one of my very first classes.
It was actually the very first class, Andrew.
Wow.
It was your first semester teaching, and it was your very first class, and you were not nervous at all.
Absolutely terrified, and I still am terrified, but I appreciate you saying that. you were so kind to me, and so you gave a lot of grace, and I appreciate that. I hope you learned something at the end. But
I learned that I have to pay taxes.
There you go. That's important. That's important. You don't want to get in trouble. So, but this is not about me. Today is a little more about you. And thanks for joining us today.
I'm so excited.
Yeah, this is going to be awesome.
Yes, I'm all grown up now. I'm done with school. I'm on a podcast for my alma mater. I feel like today I've made it.
You peaked today here, huh? Good. You have what I would call the quintessential American story, as in
American dream.
Came from a faraway place to pursue the American dream.
Yes.
Start me off at the beginning, Gaina, where you grew up, what happened?
Yes. So I have always had the American dream.
Okay.
Since I was a little kid. I grew up in Albania, this tiny little Mediterranean country in Eastern Europe. It's north of Greece. And I always knew my parents, they grew up in communism. And when that fell, they worked really, really hard to make their dreams come true. And they always instilled in me this idea that I need to go get an American education. In America, this is not maybe a very well-known fact, but worldwide, getting an American education is your kind of golden passport. Like once you get an American degree, you can go out and do whatever you want. So my parents always, even when I was like first grade, second grade, it was you go to English lessons, you go to French lessons, you go to Italian lessons, you make yourself a worldly person because your world is better than this tiny country that you were born in. And my aunt, Dr. Bichiri, she lived in America and she had her husband would take pictures everywhere they traveled. And I had this picture of the New York skyline that they took. And I had it framed by my nightstand and be like, one day I'm going to be in America. I always knew I was going to come here. I didn't know how, but I always had this like inner knowing that this is the place that I wanted to be in. And I moved here when I was 15. And I live with my aunt. And now I'm 32. I've officially been living in America longer than I've lived in Albania. And now I think back, like, were my parents crazy? Why would you let this 15-year-old travel across continents by herself? And I was having a conversation with someone and they asked me, oh, are you scared? And I said, you know, anytime that I'm scared, I think back to that 15-year-old. And I think if I was able to just completely fearlessly fly across the ocean and pick up an entirely new life. I was 15. I went to prep. It was middle of the school year, and make friends and learn the language and learn a culture and integrate myself. I feel like if I've done that, everything else kind of pales in comparison.
Wow. I can't imagine what I was doing at 15 and how much more grown up you were at that age. What were some of the most shocking things about you arrive in Spokane, right? Not New York. I mean, what was like, was the
The
food bad?
snow.
Was the
Snow. In Albania, it snows in the Alps, it snows in the mountains, but where I grew up, anytime it snowed, it was a big photo shoot event. It happened so rarely that anytime it snowed, it was like an omen of good luck. You had like the parks were full of people taking pictures because the snow was so beautiful. It wasn't this normal thing. And the year I came, 2008, I've not seen a snowstorm like that one that year. Everything shut down. But it was also so eerily beautiful because I had never seen that much snow. And then I thought my English was good when I came. I started English lessons since fourth grade. So I learned it in school. And then I also did after school programs where I learned English. But boy, do Americans talk fast. I had such a hard time understanding people, and I became really good at reading lips, reading facial expressions, reading people's verbal cues. And if someone made a certain reference, I didn't grow up here, so I don't have the same shared experience as all of my peers. People would make a reference, I would go research it, or I asked them about it. It's truly kind of being like a fish out of water. But I was so curious. Like I was so curious because I'm like, this is where I want to be. I want to live in America. This is where I want to be. So I want to learn everything. So I didn't get frustrated with myself that I didn't understand people or I didn't understand certain references. I remember my first class was a chemistry class at prep. That was like my very first class. And even the way it was a pop quiz. Like I never knew what a pop quiz is. The Albanian education is more like oral exams, big final exams. It's from the most trivial things to like the biggest things that I had to almost like relearn. But I kept a very open mind and I was curious, and it was all about, okay, how are people living here? I'm going to adapt myself to that environment.
Wow.
And it worked out well for me for a long time. But I have to say, in my early years, I did suppress a lot of like I minimized any differences between me and the next person. And I
Interesting.
think like probably a lot of like immigrants, people with the immigrant mindset, even like second generation, do that, like minimizing the differences so you kind of fit in. And I got really, my English got really good, my accent went away, and people stopped asking me where I'm from. I became part of the community, and it hasn't been until a few years ago where I felt really safe. Like this is it, I belong, this is my home, that I've started to embrace that side of myself, that actually I have differences. I'm this weird conglomerate of these two cultures that have come together. Like even though I'm married here, I have a home here, I have friends here, I have a community here. I also have my parents back at home. I have my homeland, and I visit, and I still hold on to it. And I'm finding myself in this era of like reclaiming the fact that actually I am different. I view things in a different way because I spent 15 very formative years somewhere else.
Do your parents make it out here a lot? Because they're still back in Albania.
They do. I'm actually, Cole and I are going over to Albania this summer. I was just there last November. So we try to, but I'm very close with my parents and my sister. We FaceTime almost every single day.
Awesome.
I have to see them. I have to talk to them.
That's awesome. And I may have told you, or maybe your aunt told you, I'm teaching in Florence in spring 25. Albania is on
It has to be on the
the
list.
manifest. Yes. I mean, it looks so incredibly beautiful from the
It's
pictures I've seen,
absolutely
and
gorgeous.
kind of an unknown gem. It hasn't kind of like the coast to the north of it has been taken over by Europeans and Americans and all the
It's not
tourists.
unknown anymore. When I moved here and I told people I'm from Albania, they would go, "Oh, Albany, New York." Like, no, Albania, pull up a map, show it. Today, when I tell people I'm from Albania, they either tell me they've been to Albania or they're planning a vacation there. It took 17 years, but we're on the map now.
I love it. I love it, as it should be. Now, how's Cole's Albanian? Is he picking it up? Is he doing okay?
He knows Mir Shamir, which means good, very good. Because those
That's
two,
good.
that is the one expression that you will hear everywhere in Albania is Mir Shamir. But other than that, no, he's overwhelmed with the Albanian, one of the hardest languages to learn.
And I bet, and I don't, is it a romantic language? Is it related to some of the
It
languages in
is
Europe?
so difficult and different that it actually has its own branch
I
in
believe it. Yeah.
language branches.
I believe it. Now, there was a funny story, and you may not know it, but your aunt told me once that she had taken a colleague, and this is probably maybe about the time you moved over here, back to Albania. And they were in a restaurant. You may have told me this story, the coffee story, the cup. So, an Albanian coffee is what I would envision is similar to Turkish coffee, like an
Yeah.
espresso, but it's
Tiny
got,
little
yeah,
cup.
there you go. You got one right. They're delightful. They're delightful. You put a lot of sugar in it.
I don't, but in Albanian, the ritual you do.
And so you want, I mean, there's, a couple, maybe 2 ounces, just it's a little shot glass kind of thing, right? A little bit, and like a Cuban coffee, I suppose. But this individual, I think the husband of a colleague, did he not? What was the story? How did that work out? Do you remember it? It's a
I don't remember it, but they were used to the Americano, which is, espresso and then diluted by a lot of hot water. And the Albanian coffee, it's potent. I mean, you drink one of those, it's not even like Italian espresso. You drink one of those, you're up the whole night. Like you're going to be conscious for a really long time.
That's right.
Welcome the heart palpitations.
Right. Well, and I think there was a miscommunication where he said, "No, I want a big coffee." And the people at the restaurant were like, "Oh, these Americans, I guess they do this." And they basically gave him like a tall, but it was Albanian
Delicious shots.
coffee. Yeah. So I think he might still be up from
Probably.
that.
Probably.
So craziness. So okay, so you're in Spokane. You're adjusting to high school, living with your aunt and uncle. I mean, I just can't imagine how, I served in Peace Corps in the Republic of Georgia, and you talked about how, you had a sharpened acuity towards facial expressions and tone, and it was exactly like that for me, with a very much briefer period than what you experience. But it's crazy how you're so attuned to tone and inflection and, oh, this is not good. I did something wrong. There's some cultural thing I messed up here.
Yes, you're constantly sense making.
Yes. And you're making the adjustment, and then get through high school. So you're only a freshman, probably midway through freshman year when you get
Midway through sophomore year.
sophomore year. Okay. Then you're getting your driver's license. You're finishing up at
I
prep.
got my driver's license much later.
Okay. And then the next step is GONZAGA, Gonzaga University, correct?
The only college that I applied to,
That's awesome. That's awesome.
which is funny because for Cole, he grew up in the Bay Area. That was also the only college that he applied to. Because
Oh.
when you know, you know.
It's amen. Amen to that. So you get here, and what dorm were you in? How'd that play out?
So, because I was an international student, I still lived at home,
Okay.
but I lived right across the river.
That's right.
So you could see the condo right from campus, and I would just take a quick walk to campus
That's
while
awesome.
still enjoying the benefits of living at home. I basically lived in Jepson. I was thinking about my journey at Gonzaga and the SBA, and thinking about what my days looked like. And it was like, I think any international student will relate to this. It's like you go big or go home, literally. Like the success of your studies, your grades, everything that you do counts towards your F1, your visa application, your I-20. So if you don't do well, if you get into trouble, if you kind of compromise literally your entire future, because the next semester you come in, it's, oh, you've not been performing well, or oh, you've been getting in trouble, or oh, you might become a burden of the school. So for me, I was, and I wish I now, like looking back, I wish I wasn't as serious, but I was really serious during those 4 years of my time at Gonzaga. It was studies, studies, studies. This is, and it was that ingrained in me that you study really hard and that's how you become successful. You work really hard and that's how you become successful. That's the immigrant mindset. You work twice as hard as everybody to get where everybody is at. So I kind of doubled down on that, and I had four concentrations. I had marketing, operations, international business, and I was also a Hogan student. Had the pleasure of being a Hogan student. And to top it all off, with a French minor, because liberal arts.
Yeah, why not? Why not?
Why not? And if there's any students that are listening to this podcast and they want to learn from your alums' mistakes, here is one from me. Don't do that.
Okay.
Don't try and do too much. Practice essentialism in your studies. Find out what you're good at, what you like to learn, what you enjoy learning, and focus your time and energy on that. Develop your expertise in one area and establish yourself as you are the person who can solve this one unique problem. And I will guarantee that your career path is going to be much smoother if you decide on the one thing and you become an expert at that one thing. By having four concentrations, I got to learn different sides of the business, but I never became a full expert in one area, at least during my undergrad. That gave me a different kind of advantage where I was able to take into consideration different parts in different contexts. But my advice to any students is just pick the one thing you enjoy learning and you're good at, and just keep going. Get deep into that one area. Don't go broad. Get in deep.
That's awesome. I kind of feel like you were living in the best dorm on campus because you got across the river. You know,
Yes.
you get to walk across a bridge every morning. I imagine there's a crispness to that. I mean, maybe not in January, but
Maybe.
and did you and Mira walk over together often?
At
Or
times, yes.
yeah, that's cool.
Sometimes we did.
So you're just working hard in Jepson.
I am. I practically live there.
That's awesome. Did you study in Mira's office, or did you go down to the lounge or?
Sometimes I did. There used to be little study rooms, but most of the time it was just that area by Thomas Hammer. I was just surviving on Thomas Hammer coffees. And that little lounge by the Hogan.
Oh yeah, and you have Hogan access to stuff like that.
Yes, and I had the little, it was, I just I lived there.
That's awesome. I remember seeing you around all the time.
Yes.
And then your sister's a little younger. Do you have just, it's just one sister? I know Neela.
Yes, Neela. Yes, just okay. one sister.
And at one point I believe she was battling cancer. Is that correct? Were you with her in Albania, or was that before?
She was. I was here. She was 14 when she got diagnosed with bone cancer, and she got her surgery and treatments in Italy. So the 2 summers, sophomore year and junior year, I went over to Italy, to Rome, and kind of lived with her for those 2 summers and helped her raise her spirits.
Absolutely.
Not that she needed help with that, because she is just the most resilient person. The night before her big surgery, she was cracking jokes and laughing, and it's just incredibly inspiring to be around.
That's awesome.
That kind of energy.
Yeah, and I believe she wrote a book.
She did, yes, in Italian too.
Wow.
She took some Italian lessons before, but living there, I think she was there for about 2.5 years, if not 3. Yeah. And she was communicating with everybody. And you know, the best way to learn a language is immerse yourself in that environment. So yes, she wrote a book about her experience in Italian.
That's incredible. And I imagine you're pretty good at Italian too. Your Italian's pretty.
I am, yes.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I'm told once you pick up a couple languages, the fourth, fifth, and sixth just come easier. But I wouldn't know, because I barely have a grasp of English. So
stop.
Yeah. And I also remember your aunt showing me her being on a like TV shows, maybe in Italy, maybe in Albania, but I digress. The reason I asked that was just I was thinking it might be it's hard to have your sister going through that while you're over here, but it sounds like you were able to be with her, which is pretty awesome.
I was, yes.
Yeah.
And I don't know why, I always had this, like unshakable knowing that she was going to be okay.
Awesome.
And so the 2 summers that I spent with her were fantastic. But even when I was away, I knew there was no other way.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. I to me, it's a testament to how strong family is for you. I see it, you know, with Mira and you and in some ways, I think maybe that's why you're drawn to Gonzaga, because when I think of Gonzaga, it's kind of like a big extended family on some levels.
Yes.
And the community is so special. You're getting out now you're a sophomore, a junior at Gonzaga, you're getting closer to graduation, you're Hogan's, you're taking like 38 credits a semester or something crazy. And then what's next? What you survived your sophomore year, you survived my accounting 261 class.
Barely.
So pretty much, you know, you can do that, you can do anything with the quality of instruction in that one. So
that's very true. That's very true. It was fresh. You weren't tired.
Thank you.
Were new. They weren't used. You know, it was all new, fresh material.
Yeah, I was probably learning it like 24 hours before you guys did. But,
probably.
Yeah.
I had a shared experience with everyone else in my class, and it was, what do I do after I graduate?
Come this far. Yeah.
I have come this far. So I came here on a student visa, on an F1 visa. And with that come a lot of limitations around your work. So when I was in college, there's always like a hot company. I feel like in the business school, it's like that's the company to work for, because I did a marketing concentration as well. The like hottest company at the time to work for was Nordstrom, with their formidable customer service and delighting clients. And I was very much drawn to Nordstrom. And in every single class that I did, I wrote about Nordstrom. I knew the business, the company kind of inside and out. And that was like the big dream at the time. And Nordstrom does not provide visa sponsorships. And I'm still on an F1, so finding a sponsorship is incredibly hard. And I thought, you know what? I'm really good at being a student. So I'm going to continue being a student while let's see what is within my control. What can I do within the limitations that I have with my status? And at the time, it was I can work on campus. I could work full time on campus. So I applied to a few positions, and my very first full-time adult job was a student services coordinator for what used to be at the time the virtual campus. Online programs were still relatively new, so it was a new department to support graduate students. And lifelong learner started the MBA program. Just a classic Gonzaga story. You're
Sure.
just never done with Gonzaga. And that was an entry level job, right? My first job. But I still thought, you know, this is a Nordstrom. This isn't what I like the dream, but what I can do, I love customer service. I love delighting clients. I am going to take that same mindset as if I was working at Nordstrom, and I am going to act that way with the staff. I'm going to act that way with the students. I'm going to act that way with the faculty. So my job within the parameters that I have is I'm going to provide a Nordstrom level experience. And at the time I didn't know, but now much later in my career, what I did in a very like informal way was job crafting, right? You get a job that maybe you don't like. You pick and choose. You do have a lot more control over how you spend your days and how you do the work than you think you do. And that gave me a lot of joy. I wasn't working for Nordstrom, but I was delighting my students. I was delighting my boss. I was delighting my faculty and the people that I was working with. And then I thought, you know, this is an entry-level job, but what I want to do is maybe something different. And I volunteered to write marketing copy, to write emails to students. I volunteered for any like passion projects that my supervisor had. I just made myself a very obvious choice. Like, I'm the one who's next in line for promotion. And again, for those students or graduating Zachs that are listening to this, make yourself the obvious choice. You should be in charge of your own career pathway. You should be in charge of carving that path yourself. You shouldn't wait for your supervisor, for whatever committee to make that decision for you. You should be constantly thinking about what the next step is, how can I get there, and then act and behave that way. So you even remove the you even remove that decision making energy from them. You're just the most obvious choice. So I did that. I went through the MBA program, which was probably out of all my studies, my most favorite time. It was at the time I went to the MBA program, it was a really good mix of students who had just graduated, like me, fresh-eyed, didn't know anything about the real world, and new executives. Or executives to be. There was a lot of industry knowledge. We had people from Numerica, we had people from Bank of America, we had people from Avista, Boeing, and I was learning from my professors, but I was also learning so much from my peers. I felt like whether they wanted to or not, they kind of almost became mentors, and that was my most favorite studies were my MBA.
Yeah, it's an interesting format, right? And I obviously I'm not actively involved in the MBA, but a lot more conversation and group work. You know, I'm in my accounting world, it's much pencil to paper, give me a number. But yeah, and we've had a great program for a long time, so I'm glad that you had that positive experience. So are you still in an F1 when you graduate or when you go through there? You're still
Yes.
at point, yeah. Okay.
Yes, I'm still my I'm sorry to everyone who's listening, but my story is still continuing on F1. I'm still a student.
Go on, go on.
I'm still a legal alien.
Now, Now, that's so, but are you working? No, you're not working. You're working at Gonzaga during your MBA.
Yes. Yep. I'm working
But
at
you're
Gonzaga.
not, but and you're not, but you're not at Gonzaga anymore. What are you doing now?
So right now,
Yeah. Or tell me, you graduate with your MBA and then what?
yes, I graduated with my MBA and I was still on an F1 visa. And my dean at the time said, you know, we cannot offer you a sponsorship because it's very hard. It doesn't work. What you could do though is you could go to school again and you can start the PhD program in leadership studies at Gonzaga because you work here, it will be free. And you know, you can just continue your education and you can continue working because the work, I'm only allowed to work because I'm a student. And so at the time I was working in the virtual campus and I said, you know, I've kind of gotten everything, I've learned everything that I have to learn from this department. And I've grown to the point that I've just kind of overgrown and I want to do something else. And in my first leadership, so I applied to the PhD program, started the PhD program, and in one of my first classes, I met this fabulous woman who was so funny and dynamic and inspiring. And she talked about how she managed her staff and she had just moved from Boston to Spokane. And we bonded over how everyone's hobby in Spokane is hiking.
It's so
And
true.
it's so true. We thought that was really funny. And she worked for Gonzaga. She was the new assistant dean for what used to be the School of Nursing, now the School of Health Sciences. And there was an open position on her team. And it was just the perfect time. I was looking for a mentor. I had started this PhD program. I wanted to learn new things in my career, and I ended up working for her. Her name is Jen Towers. She's not at Gonzaga anymore. She's at Harvard. She's that good. And I started working for her, and she. So I had my first job, my entry-level job, right? There's a lot of restrictions that are placed on you as an entry-level person, right? You have like a strict schedule. We just have a strict schedule. You have your like 1 hour lunch. And I remember in the beginning, I'd be like, Jen, I need to do this. I'm just, you know, I'm gonna be late. And so I would always text her. And I remember one of my first one-on-ones, she said, Gina, you don't have to text me updates. I trust you. I trust you. I know that you have good judgment, and I know that you are going to do what's best for the department. So you should take care of your personal things. You're a human and outside of being an employee, and I trust you to use your good judgment. And now thinking back, I needed that practice. I needed to have a leader trust me and exercise for me to practice exercising good judgment and to make my own decisions. I had a fantastic time working for her. I inherited the position of someone who'd been in that role for almost 30 years. So,
Wow.
yes. So, a lot of the processes were, you know, quite outdated. They were not, efficient, not a lot of technology integrations, and every single crazy idea I would take to Jen, and I would say, I really want to do this. She was on board. She was like, you know what? You figure it out. You tell me what you need from me, and I will support you. And I basically ended up almost eliminating that position from the department. And Jen and I created a new function within the school, which is called Research, Scholarship and Community Engagement. And I moved up to the dean's office. So again, during this time, I continued to make myself the obvious choice. You know, I'm the obvious choice to work in the dean's office. I'm the obvious choice to work in this new function. And we had a fantastic time working with the Logan School. We created many grants applications for Logan to get a new mental health clinic for their students. We did some health education and nutrition education. We had a magazine highlighting research and scholarship. It was She kind of gave me the freedom to make that whatever I wanted it to be. And today I, you know, I'm the chief of staff and I supervise people and I use those same things that she practiced with me. When I left that role, and I'll tell you a little bit about that. But when I left that role, I thought that I want to be Jen. This is how I want to manage people. I want to trust my people. I want to let them figure out and play and be innovative and creative and just give them the support that they need and kind of like remove the barriers and obstacles. And it works.
So true.
It works. And throughout this whole time, Jen and I are both going through the PhD program.
Wow.
And if there's one thing I am, is a good student. So that was not a problem for me.
Go ahead. You were saying something. I interrupted you. I coughed, yeah.
Well, during this whole time, right, I'm starting the PhD program. I'm dating my now husband, Cole. And I'm close to finishing up the program. My personal life, we've moved in together, then we bought a house together. And of course the next step was getting married. And for me, not only was I making a commitment to live forever with the love of my life, but also live forever in America.
Right. Things got real on multiple levels.
Things got real. So right before, a few semesters before I finished the PhD program, I applied for a green card. And when I moved here when I was 15, I would like tear up just thinking about the like stability and the safety that having that like piece of paper that brings you. And throughout the entire application process, I was very detached, was kind of like stone cold. This is something that I have to do. But then when that piece of paper came in the mail, I was just so overcome with emotions. It was like this big weight got lifted off of my shoulders and I could now decide where I wanted to go. It wasn't anymore, oh, I make the best of what's been given to me. Now it's like the world is your oyster. I can work anywhere.
Is Albania EU?
Not yet. We're a candidate. Okay. We're fighting. We're working.
Because you could take Cole to, you know, Ireland when that happens, right? You're really living the dream, right?
Yes.
Now, more importantly, have you taken up hiking as a Spokaneite?
I did. Believe it or not, I climbed Mount Adams.
Wow.
Right before I graduated my MBA. Because at the time, it wasn't to take up hiking. At the time, I was just doing so much with my brain and my mind, and I had kind of like neglected the strength of my body, and I wanted to do something challenging. So I took a class, an elective with the School of Leadership Studies that counted towards my MBA, and it was leadership and resilience, I believe,
yeah,
or hardiness.
Is that Adrian's class?
Dr. Pupa's class. Yeah. Yes. And climb Mount Adams with a bunch of other Zachs. And that was a completely different experience. And I thought it was going to be hard on my body. I thought it's the physical side that I need to worry about. But it was the mental fortitude of going up and just seeing snow and thinking that you're getting to the top and it's not there. It's just an illusion. But you do that over and over and over again, and you have your teammates and the air is thin. There's not enough oxygen. People are crying. People are emotional. I'm also crying. I'm emotional, but before I left on that trip, I asked, I went to search high school. So when you go to search, which for those of you who don't know, is kind of like a Jesuit retreat, you ask friends and family to write you letters of support throughout the time. And I thought, you know, I'm doing something really challenging here. It's completely out of my comfort zone. So I asked my family and friends to write me letters. So anytime I...
Did you guys call it Polanka?
Polanka, yes. Yeah, that's right. Yes. And anytime I would go up that like snowbank and it wasn't the end, and I would feel like I wanted to give up, I would just open a letter and I would read it. And I would hear my family or friends were like, you can do it. We believe in you. I'd be like, yes, I can do it. And that would take me maybe a few hundred feet up.
Wow. That's so incredible. And again, yes. Back to family. You know.
Yes, you can't do it without your community.
Yeah. And I know that that dirty trick of hiking when you're like, oh, it's right there. And you get to that crest and you're like, no, it's not. No. We're not even close.
So, no, it's not.
No, it's brutal. It's brutal. That's incredible. So PhD, married.
Yes.
Tell me more. Tell me what the work, everything else. You're getting through the PhD.
What do you mean more? That's the entire adult checklist, Andrew.
I know. Well, what do you do? Where are you having this 80s day at? What's going on there?
Okay. So I'm working for Jen and having a fabulous time. And I asked her for a promotion. And I said, Jen, I've done a fabulous time. I've had a fabulous time. I've done a great job. We've done great things together. And Gonzaga is a little strange in the practices where it's like, if you want to move up, you actually have to move departments or you have to move schools. And against all odds, she had managed to get me this promotion to this new function. And another big lesson, she said, Gina, I cannot give you a promotion. The only way to get promotion is if you want to leave. I cannot give you a promotion, but what I can give you is a personal lifestyle upgrade. And that is, you can work remotely whenever you want to. You can come in whenever you want to. You can work async. You can, as long as I trust you, I know that you can get your projects done. I know you can be successful. As long as you continue to have the same positive outcomes, you can have a lifestyle upgrade. And this, I mean, for Gonzaga, especially at the time, this is very avant-garde in terms of personnel practices, right? And I was, again, so inspired by that as a leader, even if you're working within a system that is rigid, you still have a lot more power than you think you do for your employees. She also didn't have to do that for me, and I would have understood, but she went above and beyond. So I was working for her. If I would have worked for her forever if there was mobility in my career. My sister, Mila, she got a job as a marketing account-based marketing, so it's B2B sales marketing manager for this kind of hot new startup in town called Ignitium. And at the time, Ignitium is around, I think, 40, 50 employees, really big clients. They're all global clients, talking about Verizon Business, HP, Okta, all the big software as a service companies in the Bay Area. And she's working here and we're talking about the company. And she says, Gina, there's... you know, we're growing, but there's the growing pains. You know, we have departments, but we're not communicating well. And I thought, you know, this would be, I have my green card now, right? I can do whatever I want. I thought this would be a really cool consulting project, right? I'm finishing my PhD. I'm working at Gonzaga. I'm working with Jen. I'm really happy with the job that I have. And I thought this would be a really cool consulting project. I don't want to embark on something new while I'm finishing up my studies. So I met with Neela, got me in touch with the VP of customer success at the time, Eric Agnew. And I had Eric as an adjunct professor in my MBA for a class of content marketing class. So I knew him. We had a fantastic conversation. It was almost 2 hours. And we ended the conversation with him saying, Gina, I want to hire you, but I don't know what for. They didn't have any open positions. They didn't. I was like, I want to hire you. I just don't know what for. And I loved the problems that he was bringing to the table. I loved these like big, juicy problems of like the growing pains. And I thought this is that there's something here. And a few days later, he said, my CEO, Oleg, wants to meet you. But again, this was, we don't know, we like you, but we don't really know what we would hire you for. We don't have a position open for you. And I thought, this is my chance to be 100% myself. I have nothing to lose. I have a great stable job, finished on my PhD. I have nothing to lose. So if it doesn't work out, it just doesn't work out. And that's a shame. So I am going to be 100% myself. I'm Eastern European. I'm direct. I'm no nonsense leader. I am very action oriented. And I thought I'm going to be myself. And what would I do? I would not let someone else dictate what my job would be. So before the meeting with Eric and Oleg, the CEO, I wrote a job description. Said, I'm going to be the director of organizational development, and here are the problems that you have, and here's how I'm going to solve them for you. And I go into this interview, it's scheduled for an hour, and I meet Oleg, who is also Eastern European, very similarly, also came here when he was 8, a man of few words. I said, you know, before you ask me any questions, this is what I would like to do for you. And I printed out this job description, said, I want to be your director of organizational development, and you have these problems, and I will solve these problems for you. And he said, he read through what I had written, and he said, okay, what do you want? And I said, here's my salary expectations. I want a nice office, and I also want to work from home whenever I want. And he said, okay, doable. When can you start? It's 5 minutes into the interview. Like, I guess in 2 weeks. I hadn't told Jen because I didn't apply for anything. I said, I guess in 2 weeks. And he said, okay, then see you in 2 weeks, and leaves the room. And it's 5 minutes later, and I call Cole, and he says, oh, did it just not go well? I'm like, no, I have a job offer. And it was a Friday. So now it's the weekend. And like, I need to tell Jen. So I put in a coffee date for Monday on her calendar. And as soon as I did that, she calls me. And you can bleep this out if you need to, but she goes, are you f-ing quitting?
She knew it.
She knew it. She was like, I am so happy for you. Like the joy that she shared at that news. So 2 weeks later, I started at Ignitium as their director of organizational development. And, you know, once you start somewhere and you've made those promises and you've said, these are the problems that I'm going to solve, Now it's time to shine. Now it's time for action.
Nice. Time. Yeah, no pressure.
Yes, now is the time to prove yourself. So I worked with the leadership team here. One of the things that I did is build our leadership capacity. And the biggest thing I wanted to get was, if people feel supported, if they have good leaders, if they have good managers, people are going to be creative, people are going to be innovative, we are going to grow. So we are a fast growth company. So right now we're almost at 70. So we've almost doubled, and we want to be at 100 by the end of Q1. So the goal is to grow, but also grow in a responsible way, in a way that doesn't sacrifice the personnel that we have, the people that we have, we want to keep here. During this time, about a year and a half in, I've solved these, there's still, you know, cyclical problems, but we solved the big problems. Our employee satisfaction is up 18%. We have leadership, we have trust in leadership, we have great communication, and now it's my time to serve the company in a different way. And again, I don't leave it up to chance. I don't leave it up to the decision of someone else. I said, the best thing for me right now is to be the liaison between what we call our functional leadership team that I created, which is all of the different leaders of functions, and our executive team. And I again drafted an email to Oleg and I said, I would like to be your chief of staff. And as your chief of staff, my role is to make you an effective CEO. My role is to be the liaison between all of the leaders. My role is to carry out your vision into reality. And he said, sounds good.
That's awesome.
So if anyone takes anything away from my career journey, is don't be the one to say no to yourself. Like, ask that person out. Negotiate that job offer. Ask for that promotion. Ask for that raise. Let other people be the ones that say no to you, but don't be the one that says no to yourself. Like, you owe that to yourself. There's really nothing to lose. If you said no, I still had a great job. I was still doing great things.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And that's where you're currently. You're currently chief of staff.
Yes, I'm currently chief of staff. I've been in this role for almost a year now. We're doing some fantastic things, and every single quarter we have a big team event with all 70 of us. So today we are going to a roller skating rink. Don't worry, we have signed many forms, and we're having an 80s party. So
now, is this out at Pattison's out north there? Is that where you're
going? Yes.
Yeah. Oh, I've been there. It's classic.
All right.
Are you going to go roller skates or roller blades?
I'm going to go with people watching.
Okay, that's a good move. That's a good move. No, it's fun. It's fun. They make it entertaining.
Yes.
Well, that's incredible. Favorite American food?
Is there such a thing as American food?
that's okay, fair.
I do eat. Cole and I, we have this joke, but it's also the truth. We have an annual hot dog. So we can have a hot dog a year. So last year's, I had a hot dog from a cart in New York, in Central Park. And that was fantastic hot dog. I don't know what this year's is going to be, but that is certainly a pleasure that I allow myself once a year.
I love it. Favorite Albanian food?
It's so hard because our food is so fantastic. But I have to say, there's more than two things. I'm going to list them all. There's, you know, the Balkanic salad, which is tomatoes, onions, cucumbers, feta cheese, lots of just fresh olive oil and some vinegar. And you let it all soak up and you eat that with like a piece of crusty bread. It's just fantastic. And then my mom, she makes petula, which are kind of like pancakes, but they're smaller and softer and chewier. And you eat them with a little bit of honey and feta cheese. That is fantastic.
Sounds delightful. Yes. Now, are your parents going to be listening to this?
I have parents, Neil and I have parents who give us whatever we want. So when we go home, we get the princess treatment. They like have a list of everything that they like wake us up with a little Turkish coffee, a little espresso, and they're like, they have the list of foods that they will prepare for us.
That's awesome. Now, in case they're listening, do you want to say something to them in Albanian?
Mami, the babi, you do a shum. Shumë faleminderit për gjithçka që keni bërë.
I actually picked up one of those words. It was thank you. I heard the thank
you. There you go.
That's my one Albanian word I know. So as you know, I'm good at Google Translate. So.
Well, now you also know Mir and Shamir.
Yes. Yes.
Good. Very good. Yeah.
And I remember when I first met Mira, Mirjeta, for some reason, I just assumed it was related to the Slavic Mir is like the peace I mean, it's not. It's not. I've learned it's not. So crazy. Well, this is the part where I ask any advice you would want to offer to newly minted graduates. But you've had a lot of golden nuggets, so I'd say. Any other advice that you would want to offer to newly minted graduates? Because I think throughout you've had some advice beyond your years.
I provide some value for whoever's listening. Here's my last piece of advice. Everyone should do this, is learn how to manage your reactions to your emotions. Emotions are inevitable. You're going to get frustrated at work. You're going to get sad. You're going to get panicked. And those are unavoidable, but learn how to manage your reactions to those emotions. Emotional agility, like people, I work with a lot of leaders and I mentor a lot of them. They'll always ask me, how do I get like executive presence or leadership presence? And the biggest factor is having emotional agility. When everything is chaotic, when there's a lot of change, your people are looking up to you to see how you're reacting. Whether you're calm, whether you're panicked, that is going to set the tone for the rest of your team. I would say if you manage your reactions to your emotions, you are going to go so far in your life and in your career.
You are wise beyond your years. It has been an absolute pleasure reconnecting.
It truly has. I am surprised that you have not asked me who my favorite professor is.
Who? You know, what I usually ask students is, would you consider me a great professor or the greatest professor? See, I would say the only thing, the key to success is how you ask the question, but I will do that. Who's your favorite professor? It's got to be Mira. She's the best.
She is truly the best, but because she's also family, I also want to provide a non-family related professor. And I want to do a shout out to Dr. Chris Stevens.
Awesome.
He was the director of the Hogan program when Cole and I, we were both in the program. When we were in the program for, I think for almost the entirety of the program, he taught most of the classes. He taught us resiliency. He taught us how to present. He taught us how to answer questions when you don't know the answer, how to work under pressure, how to present under pressure, how to answer questions, how to influence others. It was being in the Hogan program was definitely one of my truly my favorite part of my undergrad experience. And he taught me a lot. I think about him a lot as I lead here and all the lessons that he gave me.
That's awesome. I agree 100%. In fact, when I was a junior faculty, I would sit in the back of his class and just to try to absorb and learn how it's done. So never took, but I can appreciate how good he is. So you're awesome. Thank you so much for your time and have an awesome time at 80s night this afternoon. That's going to be rad.
Yes. Thank you so much, Andrew.
Cheers.
Bye.
This podcast has been a production of the Gonzaga University School of Business. It was edited by yours truly, Margie Allgaard. Go forth and set the world on fire, and go Zags.